Hey, everybody. Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy fucking Thursday, baby. Hope you guys have been having a great week. I'm in Vancouver right now getting ready to shoot the Workaholics movie called Game Over, Man. Pretty pumped. Andrew Santino and I are in it doing a couple scenes, and I'm very stoked. So hope you guys are enjoying your week. Gonna be in town for the next few weeks in LA, so come out and see me, adamraytv.com, for all my tour dates. Brad, of course, is on the road. Brad's in Sacramento tomorrow at the Punchline for two shows. Go see Brad, Sacramento Punchline. And then on Saturday, Brad is at the Peppermill Casino in Reno, Nevada. All that ticket information at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Today's episode is a goodie, baby. Holy shit. A one-time ALN guest making his return, and this might be one of my favorite episodes we've done in a while. You know this guy from the show he created and hosts. It started off as a small show here in LA and just grew and grew into the juggernaut that it is now. They just had their first season on Comedy Central, and waiting to hear about a second season. It's a part of every big comedy festival around the country. Bumbershoot, Bonnaroo, Moon Tower, Bridgetown. It's the greatest. And I'm talking about the goddamn Comedy Jam, or the Comedy Jam as it's called on Comedy Central. And our guest is Josh Adam Myers. Yeah, baby. From D.C., from Maryland. Josh, funny dude, man. Super funny. Creating this show is, man, it's going to inspire you. It really, you know, as he talks about, you know, it came out of a place, you know, of just wanting to do something fun, wanting to create something and do something for himself and for his buddies. And, it's a pretty amazing show. And if you get a chance, which you should, go to, comedycentral.com, or find it on demand and watch the episodes. I mean, basically what happens is comedians tell a story and then they sing a song that has to do with that story. And in the show, they get these amazing celebrity musicians to come out with the guests. Like Jay Farrow had DMX. Kenny Loggins came out with John Rudnitsky and did Footloose. Bert Kreischer had Scott Stapp and sang Higher, the Creed song. It's unbelievable. One of the greatest shows of all time. And they recently reunited the Oneaters, the Wonders from That Thing You Do. It's amazing. Bill Burr has, you know, put his stamp on it early on that helped grow it. But every big comic you can name has done the show because it's the most fun ever. We talk about our experience in Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, as well as Josh's old rocker days in high school and getting kicked out of a band, and his love for the Washington Wizards. It's just a fun episode, nonstop laughs from top to bottom. So enjoy it. Subscribe on iTunes, comment and rate on the iTunes page, and follow Josh on Twitter at Josh Adam Myers. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, at ALN Podcast, Adam Ray Comedy, and Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Told you the tour dates, so please come out and see us. AdamRayTV.com, BradWilliamsComedy.com. Brad and I, of course, are going to be in Vegas May 18th through the 20th at the Crapshoot Comedy Festival, doing a live ALN, I believe, on that Thursday, May 18th, with our guests Chris Porter, Ryan Sickler, and Beth Stelling. Get all your ticket information at crapshootcomedyfestival.com. It's a stacked lineup, man. The comedians coming out for this thing are going to be bonkers. So come out and see us. Go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com for ALN hats and shirts. Bring them to the shows. We'll sign them, take pics with you. Thank you for everyone watching Return of the Mac on Pop TV. 8:30 on Wednesday. The show just gets funnier, man. These episodes coming up are so good. A new episode premiered last night. Wednesday's 8:30, Pop TV. Check it out. And I think that's it. A lot of great guests coming up. As I said, Harlan Williams, Bert Kreischer, Mark Norman, Jamie Kennedy, Jay Leno, Zac Efron. The hits just keep on coming, baby. So make sure you subscribe and tell your friends, tell your family. All right, now that we got the tour dates out of the way, the Twitter handles, the merch info, the Joey Mac show info, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very funny, the one and only Josh Adam Myers.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Come on and treat yourself right.
It's about last night.
Take an L out of that word, and that's what you wanted to be.
Ooh, she's
so, that was a spelling joke.
That was a good one. That was fucking good.
So anyway, so it got weird, and it was the Molly come down, by the way, was
did you see Molly come down at Bonnaroo?
Hilarious.
That's a great band.
I would totally go see Molly come down.
It does sound like a Sum 41 Jane's Addiction type.
Yeah.
Cause Molly come down when the sun goes up.
Who did you see at Bonnaroo that you loved?
Now we're going.
Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, dude.
LCD Sound System was incredible as well.
LCD Sound System. Well done, sir.
Well, I had there it is. Oh yeah, perfect.
There's a sweet spot.
Or, I mean, you can move it however.
Well,
you
I tried to, but it's just at this total angle, which is good because
Do you like that? But you can pull it up.
No, this is perfect, dude. Okay. This is perfect. I don't know. You know who actually the best band that I saw at Bonnaroo was Tame Impala. Because we caught them after we were leaving LCD Sound System. They were on from like 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. So I got to see like an hour of them before like the buses came to pick us up. Because I did not want to get stuck like at the festival, with those people.
Because it's like a 20-minute bus drive back to the hotel.
Oh, it was like 40.
Oh, really?
40.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, the best thing, I'll tell you this story. All right, you're going to love this. So, you know my drummer, Nick, right?
Yeah.
You know how Nick is like, I mean, I love him to death. He's not listening to this. He's a fucking alcoholic. He's a fucking lush. Every fest we've ever gone to, every show we've ever done, he's gotten completely hammered, right? So, on the last night, they're picking us up from Bonnaroo, and they're taking us back to whatever, like La Quinta Inn or whatever staying at, like 40 miles away. And when he gets on, who's the girl from Saturday Night Live? Vanessa Bayer's there, and she had that like hot blonde chick that was like, they came together. I guess she was friends with her and wanted to bring her to the festival. And so it went Vanessa Bayer in this row, then the hot blonde chick, and then Nick, right? And now I had a spot open next to me, but I saw the way Nick was walking, and I was like, oh, no, he's not sitting next to me. I was like, this is going to be more fun if he sits next to Vanessa. And so he sits down next to her, and we start moving, and he starts, like, closing his eyes, and his head starts, like, wobbling. And then thing you know, boom, it's on the blonde girl's shoulder, and she's like, okay, well, let's just move your head. And he just goes, okay, my bad. And then couples, like 3 minutes later, his eyes start closing and it keeps happening. And then the blonde girl is like, all right, well, you're drunk now. Can you just keep your head up and just look straight? He's like, yeah, I'll keep trying. The whole ride.
Thinking he's being cute, by the way, by just like having that drunk, flirty banter.
Oh, drunk confidence never ceases to amaze me.
Oh, he's
you just see no idea that you would ever do sober. Just that, like, no sober man has ever been like, you know what? I'm just gonna keep acting like I'm gonna fall asleep onto her shoulder. Eventually, she's gonna be like, oh, his head's on my shoulder. I bet his dick can go somewhere. Like, that's not gonna be a logical jump in a woman's brain. But drunk confidence goes,
for sure.
All right, she's gonna feel my hair. It's gonna be very soft. She's gonna think she's in a romantic comedy. That ends with boning.
She's really gonna appreciate the drool that comes in.
And she's like, oh my god, what a sweet, sweet man moistening me.
I hate saying like, well, you're a big music guy, because I think we're all music people. Like, not anyone just goes like, oh, music, hate it. All forms.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, there's not one person that dislikes music. Everybody has their little genre, or there has their song, or their era.
Whether
it's rave days, grunge days. I just named my two favorite ones of all time. But
rave and grunge.
Yeah, well, wow. it was hair.
Those are polar opposites.
White. This is how it started. It was hip hop because Run DMC. Then it became hair metal band. Then it became grunge. No, actually, no. Then it went. Then I had my moment where I was a wigger. So I was like, I had my like EPMD, not EPMD.
That's W. He said W.
That came out of my mouth, I was like, fuck, should I have said that? And I was like, wait, no. Santino said that on stage. I think I'm totally fine. Yeah. But he's a ginger. I don't know.
Yeah.
So didn't everybody have like a moment where you thought you were black for a second?
Yeah.
The black culture was like super popular.
Absolutely. Yes. And, yes. No matter how old you are, you still have that era, whether it be 80s with the rise of hip hop, 90s with gangster rap, and whatever the hell's going on now. I don't know what now is in hip hop.
Nobody knows.
Because it's funny. I saw the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction on HBO, and they played a bunch of Tupac.
Did Hootie get in?
You know what?
Nah,
they
yet,
passed dude. Up again this year, but well, Pearl Jam then, got it.
And you know what? And let that be a lesson to you. I ain't watching until you pass Hootie.
You want Adam Ray's eyes on this sumbitch? You get him some Hootie.
You know what's funny is I was waiting to go up to get like Korean barbecue, and we were walking around some one of those like Dick's Sporting Goods.
Oh, nice!
And this song came on. I was like, God, this song is so great. And then it took me a moment to realize it was Hootie and the Blowfish. When the sun don't let her see, let her cry. Yeah. And I was like, I had to Shazam it. And I was like, oh my
God. One of my favorite Hootie songs.
Yeah. And you know what? The worst part about Hootie is that they didn't put their stuff on Spotify.
Yeah.
Like they're like Neil Young. Like they feel like they're up there like Radiohead.
Yeah.
Like they're up there like, no man, we're not putting the records to stream. You have to listen to Cracked Rear View from the first song to the last.
And I will, no. But
I'm laughing. Adam Ray is nodding his head like, yeah. Absolutely, they're in that class.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great.
But like you heard the Tupac tribute, and like his songs and what he was rapping about, you compare that to like what people are rapping about right now.
And now,
yeah, it's just like, oh man, it's just not the same.
Wait,
like,
well, you mentioned rave and what was the other one? Grunge,
rave and grunge.
So, grunge was like the music that made me realize, because I still remember like watching MTV before like sixth grade, I think it was, or like sixth, seventh grade, and I remember seeing the Smells Like Teen Spirit video and being like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then it was like, then looking at like hair metal band, which was so, you know, huge, and like, you know, it's like the Motley Crue had just gotten so ridiculous of like flying, and like the videos are like them flying to like, you know, to like shows and these huge, you know, airlines and stuff, and it's like, and then grunge was just so simple and just so much cooler, so it was just like, all right, well, that's enough of Warrant, and now it's Stone Temple Pilots, and I just rode that. And then as like a person that was like kind of getting into music at the time and really wanting to play it, that music was far easier to make, so that was like that was just the whole change. And then I remember like the whole school, like everybody started wearing flannels and Doc Martens.
Yeah,
and
dude, that was
just the greatest.
So you were in a band, yeah?
I was in a bunch of them, but I had a group of friends: Tassos, Ben, Kevin Baghini, Dave Cullen, and we were in this like band that it was mostly covers. Our originals were kind of crap. This is like ninth grade, and we did like, it was always funny because they wanted to do like Pantera, and they wanted to do like hard, like Sepultura, Pantera, Cannibal Corpse. And I was like, nah, man, let's do, you know, can we do Plush by Stone Temple Pilots? Like, this is so much better. And like,
which is still a rocking song, but when you compare it to Walk,
it's not Pantera. It's not like, it's not the growl. And
right.
It's just, we played a few shows. But what was cool about them was that after, like, they kicked me out of the band because I, even though I had bought the microphone, and I remember that was like my thing, because I was like, you know, I got
they
the microphone.
Kick me out, yeah.
I was like, when they kicked me out, I was like, fine, so that's it. All right, well, good luck having your voice amplified. I'm out of here. And then
this was the last microphone ever made. Okay, and I got it.
And I sat outside of Tassos' house where we used to jam, just smoking cigarettes, holding the mic, like listening to like Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins on my like Walkman, just like kind of crying. And I could hear them singing. Like,
no.
Yeah, it was. But you know what's funny was then I got brought back into the band after they kicked Dave Cullen out, because it was all Dave Cullen. First of all, anybody with the name Cullen, I've never met a good Cullen. I've never met a good Cullen. They're all fucking jerks.
That's going to be the name of your memoir.
Yeah.
I've never met a good Cullen.
Never met a good Cullen.
Never met a good
Wait,
Cullen.
Wait, no, he just was bad inside and out.
He
is not considerate.
He's too cool for school, man.
Yeah.
He was like, I remember when we were in God, whenever I did Little League, which I think was like eighth grade, he was on my team. I was terrible. Sure. I'm not a baseball player. I've never been. I'm afraid of the ball. If I got, you know, I try to field and you get hit once, you're like, ah, and then the ball would come after you. I remember one time I had to, because we were doing Little League and like we had been doing like pitching or throwing practice for like the day before. My shoulder was so sore and it was during a game and I was in the outfield and like the ball finally came to me and like I grabbed it and they're like, throw it in. And instead I couldn't throw it overhand. So I did this. Like underhand.
Oh, you did the softball toss? Yeah,
like no accuracy with that.
It was hard. And I got there.
You did like...
You know, the guy had to walk up a 20 feet to grab the ball.
At least you didn't sandlot it and like it run it like, from the outfield all the way in and hand it off.
And it flew like 20 feet in the air, so it took like a minute and a half to come down.
It's like, whew! Just
got up. Guys, you're a collective gasp from the parents. Oh.
I got a lot of awes in baseball, definitely. But
it's strange how there's a weird thing where it goes from... Little League, the worst players on the team are always put in the outfield. And then somewhere around, like, high school, there's that transition of, okay, now the best players are in the outfield.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's strange when you're like, oh, they put me in right field. They must think I have a cannon for an arm. No, you're eight. No one has a cannon for an arm. No one's going to hit
Nobody
the ball
hits
that
on the
far.
Left side. Nobody on this team.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you're fine.
You pick the least of the dandelions. That's why you're in right field. You know, do you ever do that or chew on your mitt?
Oh, I used to, when I played like kids soccer, mm-hmm. like they used to put me on defense because our team just kept scoring goals. I don't know, like I think it was this kid, Marcus Berg. He was like super good. And I mean, we were in like first grade and I had such bad ADD that they put me in like second half and I would just wander around the front, the goalpost.
Yeah.
And my parents would be like watching. And finally, same situation as the baseball thing. The ball's finally kicked to me. And at my parents, I remember, I still remember this. My parents are like going, come on, here it is, Josh. He's got it.
Here's your moment.
And I do that. I put my legs up like the crane kick from the Karate Kid, and I jumped over the ball.
Why?
Never forgotten that. I don't know, dude. I don't know. Like, I don't know why I did it. It's just, I'm glad I did. Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, I've turned out all right.
Yeah.
You waxed on, but you didn't wax off. That was the problem.
But they all talked about it for years. At Shakey's Pizza, they were like, afterwards.
Did every team go to Shakey's at games? Okay.
I don't know why Shakey's still isn't the juggernaut of a pizza business that I felt like it was in the 90s.
Because, like, I feel that's what they should have just advertised. Like, Shakey's. Bring your kids here.
Dude,
like,
every bring your team every here. T-ball banquet, every time, like, I remember every time there was even a remote possibility of, like, a divorce between my folks, it was like, we're going to Shakey's. And I was like, dude, Shakey's slogan, they're missing out on Shakey's. We might save your marriage, but we'll definitely bring you pizza.
Well, it's a perfect place for the kids because the parents can sit and just, like, talk to themselves while you're playing, like, skee-ball and shit.
Yeah,
like
that's where they always had enough games.
Yeah, it's just like, it was like Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
That was great. Let's go later. I got nothing to do. The Wizards game, I 100% would go.
I think about Chuck E. Cheese when I drive past the one that's on the way to the airport at LAX.
Oh, I see that one. All I know time. Where that one
and
is.
And I'm always like, here's what I always think. I pass it and I go, I gotta go there. And then on the way back,
I need to go to Comedy Works. I'm just gonna miss this plane.
I mean, but then you
gotta think to yourself, well, I can't go by myself. I can't just walk in and be the one solo dude.
No, you can do that.
Well, yeah, you can
get some looks.
You can, but I can't.
Yeah,
actually, like, you can, and I can't.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Brad definitely.
See, that's what I thought because there's
Brad walks in. They're like, here you go. Here's your suit. You're on in 20.
There's a version of Chuck E. Cheese that's sort of on the East Coast in the Midwest called Busy Bees, and it's essentially the same thing. But there was one in the giant mall that's in Syracuse, New York, and I just walked in because I saw like tubes and kids running through them. I thought I could still run through those tubes, and I just walked in like I'm gonna run through the tubes. And then this guy stopped me and was like, "Hey man, where are you going?" And I was like, "I'm gonna go to the tubes because I can still fit." Like thinking like, hey, this is a genius idea, right?
Yeah.
Then he's like, do you have a kid up there? I'm like, no, I just want to go run through the tubes. And he's like, yeah, we can't let you. We can't let you in the tubes.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know what? I'm mad but at the same time. That's a pretty good rule.
That's a good rule.
Yeah. You know, hey, because like I'd be like, no, I'm just going to run up in the tubes where, you know, the kids are by themselves, away from the parents, completely shut off from visual contact. Yeah, that's where I just want to go.
How long ago was this?
This was like 6 months ago.
If I was here, I still would have done it. I would have been like, fuck you! And then they start running through the tubes.
Well, because they Comedian. Can't. Well, because they can't
Brad
catch
Williams
me.
Arrested.
They can't catch me once I'm in the tubes. Like yeah, no, like no. They have to like get a hook or something and just no. like.
I would have done it 100%.
Wait, let me ask you: is the pain of getting kicked out of a band is it comparable or more devastating than an actual breakup with a woman?
Ooh. Good question. That's a good. Well, you know what's funny is I'm thinking about it now because I haven't thought about it in, I mean, God knows how long. It killed me yeah. because those were like my buddies, man. Like Tassos, yeah. Ben, Kevin, Dave, and myself. We were like the not. I hate to say like the rocker guys. Such a shitty, you know, put a label.
Did
on
Did you
what
have
that,
a name right? for your group though?
No, we never. That was the thing. We never really did. I was in another band with them later that was called LED. But that was like more college era. That was when we were all more adults. Yeah. Like we were, you know, we actually had like an idea of where what we wanted to do and the kind of music we wanted to make. That time, it was literally just kids dicking around in a basement smoking yeah, right. pot. But I mean, I was so devastated because that was it. That was your life. And you know it. Like it's like a breakup now with a girl. You know what the world's like, so you're yeah. like, oh, okay,
wrap
well,
your head
you know what?
It
sucks. I love this girl. I like this girl, but there's a million yep. girls out there. But anything that happens in, like, high school.
Oh, ninth grade, you said?
This is, like, no, this is the beginning of 10th grade. Oh, but, yeah. I mean, it's still, like,
formative
still,
years, dude, where you're still trying to fit yeah. in and find your place.
Yep.
And also, like, so when you do latch onto something, you're like, oh, I like this, and I like this group, and all of a sudden you don't have that anymore.
Yes.
And it's not like it was taken from you by, like, a coach. You know, or a teacher that was like, hey, you didn't make the team this year because you suck. And you're like, but come on. You're like, dude, the ball hit you and you went, eh. You know, and you're like, all right, fair enough. I see that is actually not this strong suit of a shortstop who's on a winning team.
I just love the noises that you make yeah. throughout knowing you. Like, you're my favorite thing about you are your 90s references. Just and how quick you are. Like, yeah. how quick you were like, Hootie and the Blowfish. Vertical Horizon. You know.
There's a handful of go-tos, yeah.
And then you're just, hey. This is so great.
I made a Sean Mullins reference the other day. Remember
That's,
him?
You're getting a little
lullaby?
Yeah. It was on the
wow.
podcast, remember?
Every yeah. Yeah. You had him on the podcast?
No.
We would love to have him on the podcast.
By the way, I love
You're Sincere.
Well, hey, listen, I'm not, if you said you had, like, do we got Obama yeah. next week, I'd be like, well, right. I'm not surprised. Yeah, I've seen the enough. Lineup. Fair I enough. Mean, it's fucking great, so.
I mean, like, I like how it's like, Sean Mullins, right up there with Obama.
You got Dana Carvey, Sean Mullins, Moses, Brian Moses from Roast Battle, no, Moses. I found
back.
Him, he's got the tablets, we're going to do a whole
Obama
thing.
Obama was the Sean Mullins of president, so I've said that since he got inaugurated.
Because he did say that in all of his speeches, like, don't worry, everything is going to be all right.
Nice. How did you fucking do a Barack Obama? That was good.
Yeah. Was it good?
That was, I mean,
I don't
dude,
know.
Serviceable.
Brad,
like, I just bust him out. I don't even know.
I will
really
say did. This. Brad commits hard to all the impressions he tries. And that is half the battle. And the G.I. Joe said that, and they were right. But even when you go for it, you're like
80s reference.
50% of the time, actually, you know what? 60% of the time, they're close enough to where you go, oh, cool, yeah. that was the guy, and you don't question.
Yeah.
And then there's a good 40% when you go, when he's like, hey, here's this guy, and you're like, Cookie Monster? You're like, no, that was Corey Feldman. You go, okay. Time to
well,
hang that one
to be
up.
Fair.
See what I'm saying? Corey
close.
Feldman. Where did Corey Feldman come from?
I mean, I don't know. He sounds a lot like Cookie Monster.
You could have said Jason Patrick, but you went with the funnier of them, of all the Lost Boys.
What was the one thing as in your formative years like, and I want to talk about the band stuff more, but like that you saw or that you heard or maybe... I mean, were you making funny videos with your friends? Like, what got you at least interested to be like... Like, were you the funny guy in the band?
I think I was... Well, yeah, I was always like the... Because I was... Dude, I had such, like, bad hyperactivity.
Yeah.
And I was, like... The funny thing was, when I was, like, super young, my parents gave me Ritalin. The doctor was like, no, this is what we should give him. And I had ADHD, but it didn't do anything, like, to stop it. It actually made it horribly worse. So I was just a methamphetamine, like... You know, 8-year-old up into, and I had like high milligrams. I was a kid that had to go back at the lunchroom. You know, now during when everybody's at lunch, I had to go back to the health room to get another pill after the one I'd already taken
oh,
in the morning.
Geez.
So
wow.
I was just wired.
They should have shot you with a tranquilizer dart.
I was so like, I had no filter and I would just say everything. And I think also I was like, not a smaller guy, but I just kind of used comedy, I think, as a lot of people do, as like self defense so
sure.
people don't. Like make fun of you, and I was so sped up that I was just like, and just like if somebody would try to say,
I remember that kid.
Were you like picked first in kickball because you were so fast?
Dude, I was. Well, I was.
I stole more bases than Ricky Henderson. You're like, no, Ricky Henderson never played kickball. Not with that attitude.
I was very popular, but I was popular because of just how funny I was.
Cool.
And there was like, so that was kind of just the natural thing to wanting to do stand up. Stand up was mostly because like I'd always kind of been the funny kid, but then when I started seeing what stand up comedy actually was, like I remember my dad watching. Comic Relief. I don't know if you remember the George Carlin, the epic like Carlin bit. My stuff is stuff. Your stuff is shit.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that. My dad just dying, and I was like seeing how cool that was. And I had no idea that Carlin was, you know, one of the greatest comics of all time. But I just saw this dude on stage and people laughing, and I was like, wow. So that's a place I can do the stuff I do in the lunchroom or the stuff I do on the school bus.
No one's gonna interrupt him.
No one's gonna interrupt. Yeah. And so the whole time that was what I wanted to do. But as music just came so much easier to me because it was like just writing songs and playing in bands and singing or playing an instrument was just such something that just was like, it was so accessible because I had other people doing it and like Tasso's Ben, and we'd be like, well, let's just jam today. It's not like there was like a comedy open mic that was close to where I grew up. If there was, I might have been doing comedy at fucking 12. But
yeah, and comedy is such where it's like you can practice music whenever, like as long as you guys are all free and you have a garage or a backyard or whatever, you can practice music. People say like, oh, so do you practice comedy? Like you stand in front of the mirror? It's like, no, because that you don't know, you have no feedback.
You have
like that means nothing.
And the funny thing was like I remember when I turned 18, I was like even though I was like I just finished high school, I was like doing my, I dropped out of a college and I was kind of in this band and I was like, you know what? I was like, I want to do stand-up. And so me and my buddy went to the Rockville Tower Records, and we found, like, the city paper, and we were like, all right, is there an open mic in here? And then next thing you know, like, that was the night I should have done it, but instead we just looked at CDs for the next 2 hours and then went home.
You see, CDs kids or these things.
Yeah,
that
I still have some.
I still, one of my favorite moments.
I still do.
Well, one of my favorite moments with you was the time that me and Angelo were walking around Amoeba.
Yeah.
We were stoned and we ran into you and we had no idea you were stoned. And we had this like awkward conversation in the DVD section where neither of us wanted to admit how stoned we were.
Yeah.
And all we would have had to have done was go, dude, I'm so high right now. And the conversation would have been great.
And we all probably would have hung out that night and continued because that would have, but we each tried to like pretend that we were like keeping it together.
It's like, well, you're stoned, I'm stoned, we're stoned at the same time, and then we run into each other. That's the universe telling us we should just always be stoned, man.
It's like, we're like, Adam's like,
what
were
we looking at?
You're just like looking at like a Charmed season 4 box set, and you're like, hey, fucking Charmed, and we're like yeah, I guess Charmed.
And you didn't know he was stoned after that?
But that's him. He's like hey, you see that, what is that, Alpha, the 8th season? You think that, I can't believe they got past 5. I mean, like, that's like, you never know, man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was great. But like, so we went to the Tower Records, we looked around, and then I took a break from that. Then I went back to college, dropped out again, started doing music. That was the band called LED that really started getting some shine. We started playing shows at like colleges and
frat
parties.
Were you
from it? Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. It was like so much fun because I wrote most of the music with my buddy Chris. And Tasso's was such a great drummer. Ben was such a great bassist. And we were just like, if we would have kept doing it, we could have cut a record and actually done something. Unfortunately, and this is the problem with music, and is that you're dealing with 4 personalities,
right?
And everybody has to be in. Ben had just gotten married at a young age, so he had a kid. And so he's like, well, I need to start making money, understandably so. But he started venturing towards like the heating, air conditioning, you know, job.
Gotcha.
Tasso's had the worst luck in the world, kept getting busted, like growing marijuana. Yeah. So that kind of happened. Chris, you know, he just did drugs, so that was there. So I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to go back to college, finish college, and then I'm going to move to Los Angeles. But this whole time, I've never done stand-up comedy yet. Like, I'm still saying I'm gonna do it. And then I graduate college, and that summer I moved back in with my parents for just the summer before I looked for a job to save money before I moved out here. And I was doing cocaine with this group
with
of
parents.
People.
Oh. With my,
God, that would have been horrible.
No.
I would love to. I smoked weed with my mom, but
did
I've
you?
Never. I've never.
Oh, that's great.
I've never. That's cocaine's not the not a parent's
not a mom drug.
Drug.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
a mom drug. Like no.
it's
know.
Not a hey mom, do you want to do you want to do you know cocaine? It's
mom,
like,
you want to smoke this rock real quick.
you did smoke weed with your mom though.
Yeah, when we were in, my mom has like horrible back problems. She always has,
yeah.
and they can never figure out what's wrong. Like one doctor is like it's fibromyalgia, one says it's nerve damage. We go on this trip to the Eastern New Jersey beach, like what do you call it, Jersey Shore?
Sure.
I just added all these words. Yeah. I should have just said Jersey Shore. Jesus, it's all this, dude. I literally just woke up, so I've had so much caffeine.
Oh, you're perfect.
So I'm talking like Rain Man. So the whole trip, my mom's complaining. She's like, the Percocet they gave me is not working. Oh, I guess I can't do anything. And my mom is just like completely like overwhelmed. And I remember my sister, who's a doctor, was in medical school at the time, says, you know, you should just smoke pot, mom, because
yeah.
it's like, you know, if nothing else is working, she's like,
it's
if
natural.
Someone had it, I would smoke it. And at the time, I was dating a girl that got me into smoking blunts.
Mm-hmm.
This is like this chick, this kind of trashy chick from Germantown, Maryland, that had taught me how to roll them really good, and I would smoke like an eighth in one blunt.
Oh my God.
So my dad and sister went to the beach, we're staying at the hotel, and I roll up this blunt in the bathroom, and then I walk out, my mom's on the bed watching, mm-hmm. excuse me, she's watching like Emerald or some fucking cook, you know, Barefoot Contessa or some shit like that.
Don't
and
tell Jeff.
And I'm about to go outside to smoke, and I go, Ma, I was like, remember how you said you'd get high if I had some? And she's like, yeah, I did. And she's like, oh, because nothing's working. So I'm like, all right, well, I got a blunt. And we got high. And we sat on the bed together, and we smoked a blunt, and we fucking watched cooking programs.
And did that make her feel good?
I mean, if I can remember
momentarily ease the pain,
was,
maybe.
No, yeah, no yeah. she actually, we laughed. She giggled a lot. She laughed a lot. And then she was like, I'm so hungry. And luckily, we were going for seafood afterwards, and it was great. So
that's a fantastic story.
Now, is that an impression of your mom, or is that how she actually sounds?
It's a comedic
doing.
Exaggeration yeah. of what my mom is very like Pennsylvania-y. She smoked her whole life.
So her
know.
Pipes are in the similar vein as yours?
She's more like, I can't even do it. Her real voice is like, you know, hi, I'm Sharon. You know, Josh, you should have called me. I want to know what's going on. What are the ratings like?
It's too Jewish. She's not that Jewish.
Like Coffee
mom,
talk with Linda Richman?
Yeah.
It's very
Rhode Island,
like,
neither road nor an island, discuss.
Yeah, she's very Jewy, Pennsylvania, swallows
gotcha.
Her O's, like, you know, but not.
Is it true Scott Stapp makes his own sweaters?
Yeah, she's
and
she's
so supportive and sweet.
So
loves you just, being in this business.
And that's the thing that you know, because she's the reason I'm still out here. Like, there's, you know what's funny is I've over the last week, I've run into a few people that I haven't seen in a while that are huge reasons why. Like my friend Lisa, who let me stay on her couch when I couldn't find a place to live, like early on in stand up, and then like you know, my mom or this guy, I mean, like Yasser, I hadn't seen Yasser Lester in forever,
yeah.
and he had let me stay on his couch like early on. And,
wow.
And it's just all those people, but it's like ideally it was my mom. My mom, like my parents are very middle class, but my mom was like, I'd be like, Dad, I was like, my car broke down or I can't pay for this. And my mom would just sneak me the money
wow.
just to get me. So that was one of the first things that I was able to do is when I got paid for the TV show is that I sent her like a bunch of money back.
Good move.
Well, because I'm probably going to have to borrow it if we don't get a season two. If we don't get a season
well,
two, I'm like,
I mean, hold on to this. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, the Bank of Mom is a pretty solid investment. You know.
My goal is to take her to Italy. When we get season two,
yeah.
I'm going to take her to Italy and I'm going to need like a fucking rascal scooter to pick her up from the bus, to take her into the goddamn Coliseum and then take her out. She's
That's great.
She just can't, she doesn't do much.
Is that her dream, to want to go to Italy?
Well, that was the thing, is that anytime I asked for money, she was always like, this is from my Italy money. So that she's very, I mean, you have a Jewish mother, so
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if she does this, but it's like, she does stuff for you, but at the same time, she kind of martyrs herself as she's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, here, you know, I know you need to fix your car because, you know, you need to drive around, but you know, I'm still driving a Honda from 2000 and I want to get a new car.
I make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
I mean, so you said you were thinking about moving to Los Angeles, so you're at your parents' place.
Yes.
Just for the summer.
Oh, so yeah, so I did cocaine with some friends, and I was like killing it, like just talking like shit with people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was the first time in a long time somebody was like, dude, you are so funny. You should do stand up. And I was like, you know what? You know, my cocaine like induced like, you know,
yeah,
energy. Logic. I was like, I'm gonna go home, I'm gonna sign on to AOL.com, and 35 minutes later, after it finally connects, I'm gonna fucking find an open mic. And I went and there was a website called like God, what was, do you guys remember? There's like
ChuckleMonkey.com.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Good
Everyone, on. Every comic went on ChuckleMonkey.com.
I was so
I thought it was ChucklePucker. I was like, yeah, I mean, no, is it ChuckleFucker? No, it's ChuckleMonkey.
No, that's the girls that just fuck comedians.
Probably work better with Chuckle.
Don't you remember too finding it and just being like it was kind of encouraging because like, oh man, there's so many places to get up on.
There's a whole world, like
in like every city, right?
It had you could just type in your city and they would list all the open mics. This was the greatest open micer resource. I wish someone else would make a website.
There was another
like this.
One that I think I can't think of his name. Another comic who I don't know if he still does it. Not Mark Mealy, but another guy. I made something sort of, but it wasn't, because you keep that in mind, like when you're, like you said, I'm living in Maryland, you know, and I'm like, this is it, man. I got to find an open mic. Like if I would have found that when I was 18 years old, I'd already be fucking, you know, 18 years into comedy at this point. So I was all coked up and I found this place at Wiseacres, and then I showed up on Tuesday and I had no real material. I just remember one joke being about like Mel Gibson being racist because it just had come out. Mm. And I was like, I think this is the only joke I remember from that first set, which was like, it makes sense that Mel Gibson is anti-Semitic because there were no Jews in the Road Warrior. See, that's not very good.
And then you go through examples.
And then I did. I was imagine like a Jewish guy in the Road Warrior? Like, oh, why do we have to wear all this leather? It was so stupid.
No, but it's actually
coming
though.
Back. Yeah. It's not that bad. So I'm hoping he gets racist again. And then
he's always racist.
He is, but he's not like at the forefront. If he would have won the Academy Award for Hacksaw, then I'd have like 9 minutes on him. But I did that, and then once I found that was when I was like, okay. And then I was off to the races, and I did a bunch of open mics. It was basically a blatant Dane Cook impersonation too. Somebody called me out on that.
Well, but I think, and that's something that we all kind of discovered as we got older, and then look back, we go, oh, I was totally hacking this guy, because that's what you think stand-up comedy is. You don't have this rep. You're like, oh, well, that guy does it.
You just don't know you yet.
Yeah.
That's the thing is
so you're just doing an impression of whatever you think is going to work.
Dude, in Little League, I would just do Jay Buhner or Griffey's batting stance because I was like, well, I don't have my own stance yet, and that's what the best guys do, so I'm going to do that. Griffey hits home runs doing that, and then I would strike out a lot and be like, oh, man, all right. time to move on to Henry Cotto or Jose Canseco. But yeah, it's so. Who did you have people around you?
Trying to think of a baseball player to be like, all right, I'll be more like John Olerud.
Nice.
There you go. It took me 2 minutes later to figure that one out. And then I was like, they're not going to get John Olerud.
He was a Mariner forever.
Was he?
He wore a helmet.
Yeah, he always wore a batting helmet.
That's
he had a brain.
Oh, thank God. Oh, yeah. It did work.
Great reference.
But if I would have hit it right when you were
the time has passed. Yeah.
God damn it. Yeah.
There's a short window for Uluru jokes. Yeah. And you missed it.
I would want to say, first of all, how awesome it is that, that you have a TV show.
Yeah, the last time you were on, I think, the jam, I don't know. I don't even know if it was even
Comedy Jam, Comedy Central.
I think the last time I was on was... I don't think we had anything sold, and it just kind of, you know, it just moved.
We were singing the praises of the live show, which is the goddamn Comedy Jam, which is where it all started here in L.A.
How good were the shows in Austin, man?
Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
Like, just, dude, I'm telling you, like, listeners, if there was video of it, if there's anybody that watched the show on Saturday night...
Last show of the festival
was, dude, that we said this like flat out, that was the best show we've ever done.
Oh, man.
In town or on the road, it was like we never had to, like, we're about to go to Portland and I'm super excited about it, but there is a level of when you go to a new city, it's like, you know, sometimes they're too cool for school and you want the audience. Like, even LA, like, it's like doing the show on Tuesday this week. Like, I fucking reunited the Wonders.
Yeah.
Well, the fucking Wonders.
We need to talk about that for a second.
I reunited the Wonders and that thing audience, you do. Yeah. The audience stared at me. Like, half of the audience was like, this is the coolest fucking thing. And the other half was like, I just don't know who. Is that the guy from American Werewolf in Paris? And I'm like, yes, motherfucker. Like,
yeah, but he was also in the goddamn Wonders.
Yes.
And you got them all on stage to do that thing you do.
Is that the guy from Dead Man on Campus? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
But he's also from this movie that has not been reunited ever.
Ever.
Yeah, and you got all except Steve Zahn.
He wanted to be there. It's not like he couldn't. He lives in Kentucky. So like, we were supposed to do it in March. And he was like, Steve's like, because they all found out individually. Like, first I had Tom, because Tom is married to my friend Jason Gallagher, who's the guy that produced Jay Larson's special. He also produced all the After Jam stuff I did.
Oh, great.
Avery.
Yeah, yeah. All the digital stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
ComedyCentral.com for all that stuff, by the way.
Watch it. Share it, guys. Please. Mm-hmm. God. I want to take my mom to Italy, guys. I need a second season. If not, I'm only taking her to fucking Harrisburg.
Beppo.
It's close, Mom. It's close.
Can we get a half order of the chicken parm? I know it comes family style. We're small family.
But like, so you were going to do it in March, and then
To sum this story up, Jason Gallagher was a producer on the After Jam, right?
Yep.
And immediately I hit it off with this guy. He's salt of the earth, just one of the most beautiful, friendly people you've ever met. And his sister is married to Tom Everett Scott. Mm-hmm. And he brought Tom to one of the tapings, right? So Tom's at the taping, and he just loves the show. And he's like, you know, blah, blah, blah. God, this is so great. And I go, dude, I was like, you should
do it.
Yeah. The show. I was like, we should do that thing you do, and you come out with the shades. We'll do it just like the movie. Right. My drummer will break his arm, and blah 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 blah. And he's like, nah, you know, I don't play drums, but I learned it just for the movie. But I haven't played in years, man. So I'm like, ah, well, you know, think about it, and blah blah blah. And I
practice.
That. And then Gallagher, being the salt of the earth that he is, calls me. He goes, dude. He's like, I kept talking to him that night. He's starting to lean towards yes.
Oh, nice.
And then 2 days later, he goes, Tom's in. And then I called Tom. We had a conversation. And then Tom at the time said, dude, I mentioned it to Ethan Embry. Ethan's in. And then a week after that,
he was back. Ethan was back from the military.
Yes, he was.
Isn't he the one of the movie?
You're going for the movie. No. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're doing.
All right.
It's all make believe. It's not a real.
It was real to me.
There's no band called The Wonders, right?
No. Look, if you're telling me movies are fake, then I would like to see proof that John Lithgow didn't take in a Sasquatch and fucking teach him how to, you know, set
how
the table.
How quick you had Harry and the Hendersons in the back of your head all day.
Dude, it's constantly sitting there.
You just wake up in the middle of the night and go, David Bowie Labyrinth up there.
references for days, son.
So
Embry's in.
So
that's big.
Ethan Embry's
now
in.
Now you got two of the big dogs.
I got two of the big dogs, and I thought that's where it was going to end. But then Jonathan Scheck, the lead singer, he doesn't play guitar or sing. He doesn't play guitar or sing.
All right.
So he goes, but I'm in. And then they told Steve Zahn.
Yep.
And Steve's like, I'm shooting a movie in March. He's like, I'll be back in April. I'm free to do it. Set it up in April. So then I moved the whole thing to April. And it wasn't until maybe 2 days prior that Steve said he was out.
Oh.
But.
Still
didn't need
phenomenal.
Him. We had Johnny Scordis wear a Steve Zahn mask. It was. Yeah. It was really special, and the coolest thing about it isn't the reaction that I got from the show, the people in LA. Like, they loved it.
Yep.
The people really got a kick out of it, but, and there were cell phones out, and people were
And
recording.
You were singing it, too, which was great.
Dude, I forgot the words, like, halfway through. So
you had a cheat sheet down below, right?
I did, but thank God they only show the last 40 seconds of the video, because I, at one point, I was like,
making them up.
Show me that smile again. Fuck, that's not the lyrics, dude. That was so bad.
Because
the guy that wrote the lyrics down on the thing, I knew the first two verses, but it was the interlude. The guy that wrote it mushed them together.
Oh, no.
And it was, I couldn't read it, and nobody was helping me, so I just faked my way through it, but I knew the cadence of what.
Yeah.
I'm very good at faking it.
Did the guys afterwards, were they like, man, that was a blast? Like, did they comment on how, like, we want to do this again? Like, Carnegie Hall, here we come. And you're like, all right, well, I can take it easy. But this was fun.
Yeah, that's like the beautiful thing about it was that not only did they enjoy it, but they didn't realize how important that movie was to so many people. Yeah, like, that's the thing is like when a movie like The Princess Bride has like a Entertainment Weekly does like a picture spread with all of them on there, and people get to look at them and go, oh my God, it's like that movie. It just meant so much to me. And you get to see it.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that thing you do is that kind of a movie.
Like, yeah. People
love it. And the reaction, I knew it would get a little bit of play social media wise, but dude, Entertainment Tonight, Entertainment
Variety.
Weekly, Today Show, Good Morning America, and it was just, a lot of it had to do with one of the people that works on my show just like knows everybody. She sent it out.
Good move.
But they put what that was all I got. You know what? I'm gonna do this on this podcast. That was Ryan Sickler's idea because he got mad at me that I didn't give him a shout out for it. Ryan, if you're fucking listening, Ryan, it's all because of you.
There we go. Hey, Ryan, dude, you were doing that thing you do. And
that thing he did.
That thing he did.
That thing he
doing
did.
That thing he did. That's the follow-up. Yeah, you do.
Fucking Ryan Sickler laugh.
You do. You do not completely understand the magnitude of a film until it does. Years later, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
Like,
of course.
In the moment, I'm sure they were like, they saw how well it did box office wise and Hanks and just, you know, seeing before shows like Empire and, there was that one with Catherine McPhee for a minute. Just all these music industry making shows.
There was. I'm trying to think of it.
God, you're titles and
personally,
like,
I would have gone Nashville with Hayden Panettiere, but whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, he went once again, dude. Yeah. Random ref.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, that movie really, like, put, like, gave us an insight into, like, seeing, and also was, like, you know, what, Beatles-esque, right, a little bit? Like,
I mean, that's Tom Hanks's first thing he did after winning 2 Oscars. That's the first thing he did.
Really?
After winning for Forrest Gump, that's his movie.
No way.
He named his whole production company Playtone. Like, this was like a labor of love for Tom Hanks. And the coolest thing was that really made me, like, want to do it was because I think, as everybody does, we just love Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
There's not one person that's like, fuck that dude. Like, he is just across the board universally loved. So even his shittiest movies, people are like,
because he's so likable.
Right.
I even heard That Thing You Do was supposed to be a sequel to Forrest Gump, and Gump was going to play their manager. And there's a scene, there's a sizzle, it's actually online, where he comes in and he's like, you're on the radio. And they're all like, what? He's like, radio. And they like, don't get it. They don't get what he's trying to say. So then, like, a month later, they hear it and they're like, Gump, we're on the radio. He's like, I was trying to tell you. You know. All right. So they.
Unplug and bow. Bow. Run. Run. Off stage.
There should be a Gump 2, by the way, but that's a whole other podcast.
Sure.
I could see that. Yeah. I would watch Gump 2.
So.
Show is called Smash, by the way.
And what's funny?
Catherine McPhee.
Yeah,
thank you.
It is Smash. The other kind of TV show that popped in my head was Viva Lachlan. Do you remember that?
No.
What? Isn't that the one with
Lachlan?
The guy who plays
Lachlan
Logan?
Patterson had a
show? No, not Lachlan Patterson, which I would watch.
Lachlan.
No, it's the show with, remember, who's Hugh Jackman? Is it Jackman or Jackson?
Jackman.
Who's Hugh Jackson?
Nobody.
Nobody? Definitely.
We have one listener named Hugh Jackson. He's like, come on!
There's me!
And I'm just straight up like, no, you're not. You're nothing. You're nobody.
Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson is a bitch.
Hugh Jackson's actually the coach of the Browns.
Is he really?
Yeah, but he spells it H-U-E. Hugh Jackson.
That's the only way to spell it. What, H-U-G-H? Fuck G's and fuck H's. I hate, that's my two least favorite letters.
I want to know that lineup in Moon Tower on that Saturday night, which, by the way, was me, Brad, Rafi May, Big J Okerson.
Yeah.
And then everybody
Beatles.
Came up.
Right.
But the reason why it was so good is, like, people still, like, when we do some festivals or we do the live show, you know, when you're dealing with some of these comics, like, they're kind of doing, it's kind of like a back and forth where it's like, I'm going to give you a great time. Mm-hmm. And you're doing me a favor for being a part of the show.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to give you guys, and both of you have 100%, like, you've only given hits.
everything you've done, Brad, I would walk 500 miles, Nookie, Ba with the Ball, AC/DC.
Every time
you've done it, it's been a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
Same thing with you, dude. Yeah. Ironic, even flow.
What's going on, dude?
Because of what of you doing, what's going on? We made that one of our closers because the crowd goes bananas.
So
a lot of it's
song selection. A lot of it's just knowing. Okay, yes, I really love this B side on the Soundgarden record, but if I play that song, no one's going to necessarily know, and they're not going to sing, and they're not going to sing along. But if you go to the karaoke hits.
You get it.
Yeah.
And you're really good about that, though, too. Like, I remember two or three of the jams in LA and on festivals like in Bumbershoot, and we would talk about this, and you were like, I would shoot you an idea for a song, and you'd be like, nah, you know, it's got like, you know, just you're good at guiding, you know, and also knowing the person.
I've done it. You know, it's, dude, listen, I used to be a fucking bar mitzvah DJ. I know what's going to get the party started. I didn't have a name. So don't say, people always want, if you're a DJ, people always want to go, you're DJ Josh. That's, I'm like, my name is Josh. There's no DJ in front of it. This is just what I'm doing now.
I mean,
all right. Well, that's you telling yourself this isn't a career. Because once you label yourself DJ something, then you go, all right, I got 5 years of this at least.
And the fact that your name is Josh Adam Myers, so you could have been DJ Jam.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you really
missed an
opportunity.
Didn't think about that. I would have done that. Yeah. God damn it.
But I want to know from that show in Austin, and then, like, I mean, dude, the amount of, like, rock stars on this first season of the Comedy Jam.
Oh, my God.
On Comedy Central, which you can get on demand right now.
You could go to ComedyCentral.com, or you could just go to thecomedyjam.com, and everything's on there.
Yeah. You got... in terms of, you have all the comedians.
Talk about some of the comedians.
YouTube
like Chris
stars.
Hardwick and Bobby Lee and Fortune Feimster, Busy Phillips, Hal Sparks.
Sam Richardson.
Yeah, so many.
Bert Kreischer.
Jay Farrow.
Yeah, so Marilyn Ryscombe.
All stars across that board. And then, like, the musical guests that, like, popped in.
Chester from Linkin Park. Kenny Loggins.
Sebastian Bach.
DMX.
DMX, too, was there.
Yeah, Annie Lennox.
Annie Lennox. Tracy Chapman.
Tracy Chapman.
I want to sing Fast Car with her. Yeah.
Ruby.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other.
Emerald
Lagasse.
The Barefoot Contessa.
The Bare Naked Ladies.
The little Italian girl that nobody's named that can pronounce it on the Food Network. I can't think of it.
But yes, we're saying a lot.
Paula
of,
D.
Yeah.
That would be the Paula D. Singing No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Take my money. Take all of my money to make that happen.
Yeah.
But like
that in my fucking iPad.
And we're coming up with joke names, but the legit names that are on this thing. Like, and I need to thank you because I went to the premiere party, and because I went to the premiere party, I got to meet Kenny Loggins.
How tall is he? Right?
Not.
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
I don't know.
As soon as I said that, I was like, what a dumb fuck, Josh. Jesus Christ.
Frame of reference.
You can be 5 foot tall or you can be 7 foot eight and be like, he's huge.
Yeah. Muggsy Bogues. How tall is that guy?
Massive.
Like, everybody is, you idiot.
Yeah.
No, he's a giant, and his son is like literally looks like Sean Bradley. His son was fucking like 7 foot.
Amazing.
And I got his number. That's the coolest.
Sean Bradley?
No, I wish. I wish.
7'7" Sean Bradley.
But no, Kenny was like the sweetest guy. And the funny thing was, getting the musical acts wasn't hard at all. It was literally like we could have had so much more if we would have had Slash. And I think, you know, when we get another season, that's going to be the easy part to book. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like the idea of getting like Kid Rock or getting Atlantis or whoever the fuck we want to get, we'll be able to get.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
Did they have as much fun as it looked like? And were they as...
Yes.
Because that's... I would venture to assume that, like, Scott Stapp, like, that's... I mean, just, you know... Comedians want to be rock stars. Rock stars want to be comedians. Maybe not all of them want to be comedians, but they all love comedy and they respect our art form as much as we respect theirs. So I'm seeing them on stage, like just in the, even though it's, you know, definitely musically set up with the band and everything, but like it's still very much like a comedy show too. So like you can tell they're like, oh, I'm in a different world. You know what I'm saying?
You mentioned the Scott Stapp thing. Like, he not only was he like the nicest dude in the world, but like that was
sounded great.
There's a part on stage where Bert's already having the time of his life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's literally. Just to summarize for people who didn't see, Bert Kreischer was in a band with one of the members of Creed.
Yes,
they kicked Bert out of the band. Or
no,
Bert kicked. That guy,
the drummer, out, I think.
Yeah.
No, so Bert was in a college band called Giving Out Spankins. Great name. Great name. And they brought in this guy, Mark Tremonti, to play guitar. Yeah. And Mark was far better than anybody in the band.
Yeah.
And he was too good for them. So because he made them look bad, Bert kicked him out. Years later, Mark Tremonti formed Creed with Scott Stapp and the other two guys. And so the whole story was about him reuniting, him kicking the guy out of the band, that guy doing that, but him trying to reunite the band because Bert's a front man, he's not a lead singer.
Yes.
They needed a singer.
Yeah, right.
So he brings like his fucking, his old college buddy to play guitar on this, who actually the best part about it was starting a new job at Bank of America like the next morning, and if he didn't show up he'd be fired. So we had to fly this guy in, make sure he caught the red eye out to get back to wherever the fuck he lived, Florida, and then we got Scott Stapp at the last minute. And I remember I taped my story and song, and when we did the rehearsal for it, because I knew it was going to happen on this like Tuesday night, and I was so excited to watch it, but I had to go to the improv to run a story. And like somebody texted me, I think Hannah, and she's like, "Josh, get back here right now. They're practicing higher, and it's the most beautiful, magical thing you've ever seen." It was raining, and I like just bawling through the streets of Hollywood, got there as they're just finishing up, and even seeing it for like 10 seconds, I was like, "This is going to be so beautiful." And when they actually did it, It was like the joy on Scott's face and the joy on Bert's face was like unmatched by anything.
Well, because then there's this moment where they walk up together at like one of the last choruses, and Bert's trying to like mirror Scott Stapp the way he's like getting into it and everything, to where he's just trying to like, which is just a great moment too.
It's one of the greatest.
It was him finding some humor in that moment too.
It was just the coolest thing. And this is the thing. And I think, you know, for years, as you know, guys that are into music, we're comedians, we know that a band like Creed gets a lot of shit.
Yeah,
sure.
You know what I mean? But they're fucking good, dude. Yeah. Dude,
they're good musicians.
Dude, great, dude. Yeah. Dude, With Arms Wide Open is a great song, dude. Mm-hmm. Higher is a great song.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's like the corporate rock of the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's good, but it seems like it's manufactured and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? It's still these guys that wrote all these great songs, blah, 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 blah. So they became...
Listen to With Arms Wide Open after you have a niece, nephew, son, daughter born. And if you don't cry, you don't have a soul.
Dude, you know what's funny? I did a comedy jam back in January 2015, and I told the band to learn With Arms Wide Open.
Yeah.
And the day of the show, I was like, I can't do it. Let's do New Sensation by NXS, and we'll rock it out, and we'll do this.
Right.
And Joel's like, all right, and I do New Sensation, and then I bring it down like I always do, and I say, you know what? I was like, I was going to do Creed With Arms Wide Open, and the crowd was like, do it! And then we did it, the whole fucking audience sang. So people love that shit.
Yeah.
So what I was trying to say was, when he says to the audience that Mark Tremonti left and formed Creed, the audience like laughs. And I was in the back, and I remember my heart just kind of like sunk a little bit.
Right.
But the second Scott Stapp walked out on stage, dude, it was like, dude.
Had you not seen a reaction like that?
That was bigger than DMX coming out. That was bigger than when Coolio came out, or bigger than anything I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
That was the most beautiful moment. Like I say this, man, you know, not to get, you know, I'm talking about Ange, but
no, please.
You know, when Angelo Bowers,
he's the reason the show exists.
He literally is like, he's there at these shows. So with you doing Nookie and the audience going crazy and you singing fucking Ironic or What's Up when we were doing that in I don't know, the first time we did What's Up, was that in Austin?
Yeah.
When we did that the first time in Austin, the crowd singing.
Yeah.
Those beautiful moments are like where I'm not a spiritual person, but that's when I'm like, oh, that's
he's
Angelo.
Singing along. Yep.
That's Angelo's whole spirit.
Yep.
In the audience, and dude, when fucking Bert and Scott Stapp were singing, dude, that was Angelo, and I'm in the back like weeping.
Oh man, yeah.
You know, but it's like smile weep. Like I have a video where I'm taping it too from like the curtain, and I'm just like, this is so good. Like,
but also those moments too are more impactful than like just looking at an old picture and getting
kind of sad and remember, like, you know, you need those celebratory, like, somewhat spiritual things that,
yes,
that really, you know, not to fucking quote a creature, but do take you a little bit higher as far as, like, I know that sounds like a joke, but I'm, know, like, but first of all, I'm not a radio DJ transitioning to a weather segment.
Because you don't want to act like you're just sitting there in my own prison. You want to have it be a whole experience.
No, you know what I'm fucking saying. Fuck you both. All right,
but
so
what if... That's a weird random song. But first of all, the funniest thing was, I didn't know you said quote a Creed song. I thought you said, I don't mean to quote a Creedza. I was like, what's Creedza? The fuck is a Creedza? Is that a philosopher or something?
The 190s reference.
Jewish God, we haven't.
Reference, dude. You're killing these references. Creedza, y'all. Creedza.com. Food, fun, and games only at Creedza.
A Creedza sounds like a Brookstone knockoff. Like maybe in Italy where they're like, we have massage chair, and if you... Dude, you know what I love about Brookstone real quick? Is that if you act like you are maybe going to buy that $8,000 massage chair, and you like, you have to make the right amount of noises and build some rapport with the guy to where he like is like, oh shit, this guy's interested, and you ask questions like, and do all the speeds, can you like adjust them on your own, or do you have to set a timer? Stupid questions. And he goes, oh shit, okay, this guy might buy it. He comes over and then he turns and he goes, you know what, usually people are supposed to be on it for 10 minutes, take another 20. And you're like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna think about not buying this more. And then he comes around the corner and he's like, and if you like the massage chair, here's a little head massage you can put up your ass, you know. He gives
Which
you
is
the
obviously
extra bonuses.
A vibrator, but yes.
Yeah. But like, I built some rapport with a guy at the one at the Irvine Spectrum when I was down there a little early.
Of course,
and
he did.
Dude, he let me on that chair for 45 minutes, and I had Time to Kill. And I also had the DVD of Time to Kill, and I watched that while I was in. All right,
that's
so
great.
All right.
That's so great.
So I want to know, after that Scott Stapp moment, are you like, are those the moments where you go, man, this is an incredible show that that came from, I mean, you know, the Lyric Theater. Well, that's not where it first started, right?
Well, that was where this version of it. It wasn't as, I told you, like, I don't know if you were there that night, but it was Adam Devine at a small cafe. I had booked him to do it, and the title was The Goddamn Comedy Jam, but there wasn't like a guaranteed thing that you were going to say.
Right.
It was like, all right, so there's stand-up, and there's a band here if you want to fuck around with them.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Kind of
just like, so they could do whatever they want to do. And it was like, the first two we had done were fun. Nobody used the band except for bringing people on and off. And then I invited Adam to do it, and it was a really light crowd. And I think there was like a girl there or something that, you know, that was like obsessed with them. And he just did this whole song about like the, you know, the room and the girl and whatever. And it was just this is like fucking 2010. And it was just this beautiful thing, and I saw how like insane the crowd went over that, and that was when I was like, oh, that's the format.
Yeah, that's
it's
the show.
It was like literally just plain as day. I was like, all right, so that's the format. But then I sat on it, so. And then I waited until, 2014. So I waited almost 4 years before I actually started.
But it had things have to percolate sometimes to really, like, I mean, and I don't know how many live shows you did until the specials got picked up. Like, at least what?
We did the show from the first one at the Lyric, July 2014, on the 2 year, like a little before the 2 year anniversary, we shot the special.
Right.
But the TV thing was started right from the jump. Like, we did the first show, and then we had production companies coming after us. Wow. It was just immediate. So.
Well, because, I mean, anyone goes into that room. And if you're in Los Angeles, if you go to any of these comedy festivals where the goddamn Comedy Jam is, go to that show.
Please.
It is the most fun you will ever have at a comedy club or at a comedy setting. It's incredible. I mean, we saw Marc Maron play the Rolling Stones on guitar and sing, saw Louis C.K. walk in, do stand-up, and then sing Pink Floyd.
That's so great.
That's one of the most incredible things that I've ever seen.
So great.
And like, because you just think Louis C.K. is going to be like, this is stupid. But then he sold in.
That was great.
And totally went for it. Seeing Jim Jefferies do Wonderwall, seeing Melissa Villaseñor do an incredible version of I Will Always Love You, just all this amazing stuff. And you see the audience and how they react. How could anyone not be like, yeah, this doesn't belong on TV? Like, of course it does. It's amazing.
Thank you.
And one thing I will say, and I know I've told you this off mic a bunch of times, but I love so much that you have this show. First of all, because you're a great dude. Second of all, because it just shows that don't try to be kitschy. Don't try to invent something that's weird and just like, just do whatever the hell it is that you want to do, whatever you're passionate about. You are a rocker. You are a rocker comic.
You're a music some raver guy. In me. And some wigger. And some wigger.
W with a W.
Wigger, please. Okay, but I had to. Anyway, but like, you have all that. So
great
you,
reference.
So you created a show that does that, that exemplifies those parts of your personality. And that's what I love about the show so
Thank
much.
You.
Is it's an extension of you. It's not like, well, let's try to think of something catchy and cool and weird. Weird and rigid, like no, just do whatever the fuck it is you want to do.
Yeah, nobody else could have created the show, you know.
Yeah,
there were shows similar to it, but I think, you know, it was like what Bill said to me. It's like, dude, it's just you. People have done, you know, people have done podcasts before. It doesn't, you know, right. And people have done fucking, you know, movies about this or jokes about dating. It's just, but you just have one that is just so. It's just so right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it is because of the, you know, dude, I think you know it, man, especially from doing the show so much. It's like there's a pure thing, you know, with both of the things, with stand up and mm-hmm. with music. But comedy is so hardly judged. It's just not hardly. It's so hardcore judged where people are like, okay, well, I didn't like the way he looked and this and that. And so,
yeah
he's funny, but I like that guy more. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. And music is just enjoyed throughout. Because, dude, I like songs that are Katy Perry. I love Metallica. It does not make a difference. Like, I mean, if you looked at my save songs on Spotify, you'd be like, really? You know, that and that? That's great. And I think it really brings out so much. And and it's also, it's like, it's so when you combine them, it's like there's really no judging anymore. It's just everything right from the jump is being enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think a lot of it has to do with the band. The band, those guys, the really band's bring it. They really fucking bring it. Yeah. And then Johnny and Jeremiah just are so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then it's also the people that I bring on it. I mean, like, dude, if you like, I'm open to always using new people, but at this point, and we are, but I'm always just like, nah, let's bring the hitters back.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, it's like you got to have a balance where it's
put
like,
Mateo
right,
Lane on every show.
He's a golden goose, dude. He's the golden goose.
Mateo Lane.
But I'm
incredible.
Trying to get him outside of the of the effeminate singers.
Yeah.
And I want him to start venturing into doing like.
Well, that's what's cool.
Yeah. And it's, and I think like, you
and,
know.
And by the way, thank you because. I'm on the road all the time, and I didn't know who Mateo Lane really was. I was introduced to, like, I'd see him at the store, the improv, whatever, but I was introduced to Mateo Lane through the Comedy Jam, and I was like, holy fuck, this guy is amazing.
He's a great
talent on so many levels.
On so many levels, and it's like he does it so effortlessly.
Yeah.
He's such a diva. I mean, we were at Bonnaroo, like, you know, I think like we finished our show at like 3 p.m. and goes, well, that's it for me for the night. Yeah. I'm in. Gotta rest my cords.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's 3, dude. I was
I
was like, the Beatles are playing on a stage. You don't want to see that? And he's like, nope, don't care. Sorry. RuPaul's Drag Race is on. Peace out, bitches. And I was like,
you know what's great too, man, is how selfless you are with the live tapings, because it's like, you know, you know, unfortunately, like for time's sake, like they can't put all the warm up stuff that you're doing when you're starting the show. And like that's how the show, that is a big integral part of the energy of the show.
Sure.
And what the show is, and like you being at the forefront like that. And they have you, you know, you can hear you announcing off
stage. I'm in it for about 5 seconds out of the 8 episodes.
Sure.
And they even cut some of my intros, but.
And I'm sure there was some like give and take on that to like get that in and whatnot. But
there's
like,
a lot of give.
Yeah.
There's a lot of give. Yeah. Not much taken.
For sure. And, you know, in my opinion, I think it should be open with you for 5 or so minutes on doing whatever, even 3 minutes just to set the tone. But, and maybe that'll be figured out. But, but seeing that live, I mean, it was like, man, it was like people don't realize. When they see like the episodes just start and it's kind of right into it, that like what is happening prior to that.
Sure.
To get those people
build up.
Not only on board with the energy of the show, but to let them know like, oh, this is what it's kind of like, because you're doing what you do with the Midnight Snack and just you know, at the Jam and in your sets, just being able to riff and do crowd work and then musical crowd work, you know, which is
The last on the Epic Austin show that we are referencing, you guys started off the show with Neil Diamond's Coming to America.
Oh, that's the best.
And you dragged some guy on stage and said like, you've got the opportunity for the microphone, and then the guy didn't know what to say, so then you kicked him off stage. Like, it was just it was amazing.
Didn't you guys mouth kiss too?
I kiss dudes a lot. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I think, because there's not like, I'm not gonna fuck them, and there's nothing like gay about it. I just think it's so ridiculous.
Season four, you'll fuck him right there on stage.
I think it's just ridiculous, and I think it's like it shows how non-homosexual I am by doing it. I don't put my tongue in. It's just like a kiss, like I was kissing like my uncle. He's like, ah, thanks. I mean,
it's also really bad. No, and we'll put a pin in that and come back to that. But I think what the I think what is the energy is just getting so at an all-time high where it's just like it's an anything goes type. Move, you know, where you're crowd surfing, then you're kissing a dude, then you're rocking out, then you're, you know, jerking off the dude, then you're in the crowd,
and then you're, what was that?
And then you're kissing fucking a dude in the ass, and then you're
and then you're singing Neil Diamond, and then you're backstage, you know,
and then you got a drill dough, and you're drill doughing somebody in the front row,
a drill dough,
yeah, the game,
that's
the,
a real
the,
thing,
the, like the hand on the dildo thing that's on the drill, and then you ga.
Oh God, the things some people do.
You don't know about a drill dough
for pleasure.
But Jeremiah named it drill dough, and now I'm just like that's.
Trademark
that shit.
Not to be confused with Sergeant Bilko, the fucking Steve Martin, Kelsey Grammer.
Nice reference.
Military.
Nice reference.
Reference? That's what they called Rafe LaFrance when it was.
Reference is a techno band that's playing at Bumbershoot this year. Reference.
I want to know before we got about five more minutes.
Cool.
What is your, after doing the first season, what was your favorite moment? I mean, we might touch on with the Scott Stapp, but like the moment where you were like, oh man, like all the work we put in, like were you able to step back and really just watch and enjoy without having like a producer, performer, critical mind, you know? Were you watching, you were like, as like a fan, were you almost like...
Well, I already said it with the Bert and Scott stuff.
For sure.
That was a moment I got lost. I got lost with the audience, right. And I was like looking at it, at how beautiful it is.
Then what about afterwards, or people coming out of the woodwork from back home, or just comics you look up to? I mean, having Burr, I mean, to me is like the greatest compliment ever, that he is not only involved and puts his stamp on it, but like... You know, loves it, but like, are there other people that you don't know that you hadn't met that come up to you?
I think that's something that we all can say, regardless of if with the gym or with stand up or whatever we've done, is that like that now, like I created something that like Burr's not, you know, just a comic friend anymore. That's my buddy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's somebody I talk to him all day long. Text, talk about sports, and that because it all started from that little thing. You know, and that's so cool that like I created something or I started something that so many people have really enjoy just as much as I do because I'm having so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I never expected the TV show or to become a TV show. It wasn't like this is a goal. The goal was fun.
Yeah.
The goal was having fun with my buddies and hopefully, you know, being able to do something other than do stand-up, just to break it up just a little
bit. You're trying to create your own opportunities.
But, dude, it wasn't supposed to be an opportunity. It was supposed to just...
Over stage time?
It was not just... It was, like, literally, dude, I just want to have fun, man, and I think this will be a party once a month.
Yeah.
And I remember Byron Bowers, like, after the first show, being like, dude, you know what's about to happen, baby? This is getting big. And I was like, nah. I was like, dude, I don't want to get caught up in that like JFL New Faces excitement that I had. Yeah. I just want to enjoy because I did not enjoy when I got New Faces because I wanted so much. So I've always left it very like, you know, like what
even keeled expectations,
even keeled. But the enjoyment I get is seeing that like when I see the two of you. When I see you guys rocking and having fun. Like,
and when I turn to you after and go, I tried way too hard. And you just like laugh. Because it's like, on that last one, dude, I was fucking singing like that was the last time Ironic was going to be sung. And it was on my shoulders to deliver.
I always know. I was like, Adam's going for it. His face is getting extra scrunchy. And you're just like, your lips get tighter like a butthole. But that's what I love. Dude, I'm telling you, I get more fun seeing how much fun you guys are having, how much fun Avery to bring him on and bring him to when he got to play keyboard for Sympathy for the Devil when you mentioned Marc Maron.
Yeah.
That's great. The band, dude. These guys deserve so much recognition, and to see them getting the recognition they deserve and all the screen time they're getting on the TV show, that's incredible. The best thing that anybody has said to me about this show is John Renitsky the day after we finished taping, which was such a, like, I had a real emotional day when it was all done. I was like very cathartic just getting everything out. And then he called me or texted me.
He did Footloose with Kenny Loggins.
With Kenny Loggins. And he goes, and he says, this is the perfect thing said that just warmed my heart, made me cry. He was like, by following your own dreams, you made so many of your friends' dreams possible.
Wow.
And that was it. That's the enjoyment. Like, if I died next week, you know, from Zika or some shit like that, or from fucking France, from some, I get it.
Or from the wizards getting knocked out.
Don't How dare that.
They're not just going to.
How
They're not
you.
Going
How
to
do that. How dare you? Don't put that in.
Just don't
put,
do it.
Don't put that karma out there.
I've never once said anything bad about the Seattle Supersonics. I, if anything, love them. And I gave you a goddamn Sean Kemp and Gary Payton pin. And you're going to fucking do those. That? Listen, ladies and gentlemen, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm fucking
shit. Can I be honest? Your guys are going to win that series in six.
I think it's going to be very, very close. But I think we're going to win tonight.
Dude, look how that whole game was going. It was one good quarter they played Celtics.
Dude, I said this. Were you there when I said
no,
this outside?
Said, yeah.
I was with, dude, this is the greatest thing ever. Me and Burr went to a cigar bar at 10 a.m. and we're smoking like a $90 cigar. It's me, Burr, and this like random dude watching the game. I'm freaking out. I'm like stress eating pizza, you know, and like we're just having the time of our lives. And he's right. He's like, it's a game of runs, and there's such a rivalry between both teams that it's like it's just insane, like how much they hate each other. And immediately after the game, Al Jackson called me, and he goes, dude, Wizards are gonna win. He goes, Celtics did everything they could possibly do to win that game. They shot 38 three-pointers, hit 17 of them. They're not going to shoot like that
again. You can't.
Mm-hmm. You can't. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to talk shit about Jay Larson from the Crab Feast, but that motherfucker somehow out of the woodwork is now a huge Celtics fan. Oh, the whole season he doesn't talk shit until right now.
You hear that, Larson?
And now we have a bet.
If
whoever wins, I got to take him to Rao's and I'll buy him the seafood salad. But listen, man,
I'm taking the Shakey's.
I mean, ideally, I'd be happy with that. It's much cheaper.
I think if the Wizard, the bet should be if the Wizards win, then Jay Larson has to play this song at his son's wedding.
And everyone, hey,
this is such a great song.
So
it really is.
I mean, it's epic. Is this the one where he was standing on the edge of the cliff? Or is that
just doing like
every video is him on the edge of a cliff.
Every Christian
dude.
Rock band is
dude.
Just
you
out
ever
want to
standing on the edge of a cliff? I feel like drive through Topanga Canyon between like you know like Woodland Hills and Malibu, and that's every time. The first time I drove through that, I was like, "This is where they shoot Creed videos." You're like on the side of cliffs.
Oh my god, what a great realization,
so, dude! I'm go there next, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Go there, you will see it, and that's you know that's if I was a scouting. Location manager, that's where I would shoot it.
That guy, yo, if there's an award for music video location scouts, like the guy who scouted that one.
And that was like before drones, so they must have shot that with a helicopter because that camera's just going around him. Like,
dude, they spend like shit. Insane. They spend millions of dollars on videos. Now, like, they spend literally $30,000. Like, that's it.
And that's low for, like.
And that's
I remember, like, at one time, the most expensive video was Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson with Scream at like 1.5 million.
Oh, dude, you remember Wu-Tang, the one song where they're on like the side of a building?
Yeah.
And Hypnotize was $1 million.
Yeah, it's insane.
Well, the location scout, if he didn't win for Creed, it's only because he lost to the guy who scouted the video Summer Girls by
there it is
by LFO.
I literally saw your eyes went to that part of your brain where all the references are. Yep. It's like
LFO Billy Shakespeare wrote a whole bunch of sonnets.
Dude, I might sing this,
up so quickly.
I might sing this at the next jam if you're okay with that. Nope. See, that's what I love about you.
I just don't know how. I mean, would it be funny? Probably. Yeah. Would everybody know it besides people that are our age?
I mean, and they don't know the verses. They just know the chorus.
Speaking of New Kids on the Block,
yeah,
that also could be great for the next
that
season.
Could be
incredible. That could happen.
I could reunite
you right
them
now,
for the jam.
I'll tell you guys right now, like, if there is a second season, I'm pushing. So goddamn hard for the two of you.
Well, you're very sweet to say that.
And we will push for all of our listeners to, all in addition to going to the Comedy Jam, in addition to seeing you live, also make sure you check out F is for Family Season 2
May 30th.
Netflix.
I think May 30th it comes out. Yeah. And I'm also, I got to announce this, I'm now the voice of the San Diego Zoo.
Hey. Oh, wait, okay, so we need an example.
Yo, wait a minute. Like, in the park when you hear, like...
No. Just their new ad campaign.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
It's not fucking Hyundai. But it's...
Josh, you don't have to... Don't do that, man, because a voiceover... Dude, it's awesome.
It is. And it's because you know what they wanted? They wanted, like, they're like, we want like a kind of like an older rock star, a guy that sounds like he did drugs for years. My agent's like, I got a perfect guy.
Wait, can you give us a little taste?
Yeah, I'll give you the whole ad because this is one of the big ones. It's because they wanted like rock singing if you can get it in. So it's
what's
like,
the mute? Wait, let me get
am
some
I gonna
music
get in
for
trouble
it
for this? Could I get in trouble if I haven't even? I'm taping it tomorrow and then I'm taping it like for a few.
Maybe you shouldn't do it. I don't know.
Make one up then. I want to do like the exact. Well, like,
there's a bunch of new shit at the San Diego Zoo at Africa Bondu. San Diego Zoo brought to you by.
That's what I want to hear.
Like
Yeah.
You gotta have it. Well, there was some singing at the beginning. And the I fast read a little jingle, the and then the ending part is like, you know, brought to you by. By fucking, you know, Shaggy's paper. brought to you. That's gonna be me in the booth tomorrow. Brought to you by first part was good. Just listen to that, guys. Go to the zoo.
It really does help though when you hear that stuff for an ad for the zoo, because you're like, all right, people, the zoo doesn't need any advertisements. It's like people know that the zoo's out there.
They're going.
But when you hear those, like it does match the energy. Yeah. Of like, it does make you more like, look, you're going.
Let's go see some elephants.
And also, like, also with like a rock star sound, you're like, oh, maybe the zoo's getting a little crazier. I just didn't know about it.
I'd love that you thought that I would be like the voice of the actual park. So it's like, this way to the penguins. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, dude.
Tortoise is that way.
The snake exhibit will be closing in 10 minutes, but the trouser snake exhibit will be open for 24 hours. all right, ComedyCentral.com the Jam episodes.
Go to thecomedyjam.com.
Yeah, that's easiest.
That'll have everything, guys. Watch it. Tell your friends. We got two episodes left. It's every Wednesday, but you can watch everything, you know, and tweet it out, do whatever. And can I get my shit?
Yes, all of them.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
I mean, we do it all in the intro, but do it now, too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, well, JoshAdamMyers.com. And if you're looking up on all social media, Josh Adam Myers. That's it, guys. I love this. This is so much fun.
Yeah, this is the best. I'm so glad you came back. You're a solid hang.
Thank you very much. And go Wizards. Thank you.
I know you love your Wizards. And I do love that about you. Because, you know, it's like all of us are big sports fans. Sure. But it's like when you see, like, look, not having a basketball team, not having a baseball team in the playoffs for 15 years, you attach yourself to your friends. When their teams are in, because
you want to see them happy,
and also when you love sports so much, it's you love to get emotionally attached, and like there is something great about not having your team in it, because like, oh, now I don't have to stress in the fall. But also, I miss so bad not having a team in basketball playoffs, because it's the best. Dude.
It's, you know what there's moments what I love so much about sports, and what I love about you. And I don't know about you, because you're not from Denver, are you?
I'm not from Denver.
But you're a Broncos fan. Yeah. So I kind of see that. Yeah, I know you're a big fan, but at the same time,
he's got emotional connections,
like,
but
you know
what?
Go fuck yourself, dude. They fucking won two Super Bowls in fucking three.
Did you chase Jay Buhner onto a bus after a game?
Do you understand, dude? I've stuck by every DC squad, just like you suck by every. You've been a Seahawks fan your whole fucking life, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, be a Broncos fan if you've been with them for years.
That's
fine. I respect that.
I mean, but
it's different.
Yeah.
But
it's different. But then I attach myself to pretty much every LA team, you know, whether it be Dodgers, Lakers. You know, we pretty much win all the time, even though now we suck. But
I'll never root for the Lakers. I'll never root for the Clippers. I'll never root for the Rams. I'll never root for the Kings. Right. I root for my teams. So when the championship comes, it's gonna be fucking sweet. Dude.
It is.
And
dude.
I'm gonna cry. I cry a lot. So, but I'm really gonna like.
Do you? What do you cry over?
Yeah, just I did, you know, commercials.
Bank commercials.
Like, you know, Brent's got that joke about watching the British people.
Yes.
If I watch Paul,
what's your name? I don't have a name.
That's such a
that's
me.
A great joke.
That's me. Like I'm the guy watching Paul.
Did you
Potts.
Watch the Jimmy Kimmel thing about his son with the open heart surgery?
I did, and I got a little. But
oh, really?
I got me. It's
got me too.
I watched when Paul Pierce just retired. The little video of them calling him the truth that made me tear up.
Yeah.
It's just anytime people are just being, I'm an emotional person, you know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. And I think that's kind of what makes me who I am.
Yes,
and,
1,000%.
And if you don't, dude, there's like, I hate to be like, there's nothing better than a good cry, but there's nothing fucking better.
Yeah, dude.
Than a good cry. It's so cathartic to get just to, it's like if you smoke like a cigarette, you smoke weed. Like, you know, in with the good, out with the bad.
Yeah.
And that gets you.
Yes, because kind of recharges. Nothing like you. A cigarette to bring in good.
Dude, but I cry at like the weird, I cry at the most random shit, dude. I remember like it all started when Alf, the first episode of Alf. That first episode where he's like, you know, he calls Melmac and he's like, it looks like I'm stuck here. I remember fucking weeping. And from that moment on, dude, wow. I cried everything, dude.
I like cats.
I swear to God. I'm not just doing some random reference. No. I'm fucking real.
Dude, I cried. If you didn't,
I cried too.
If you don't have a sweet sitcom.
I'm going to believe that that's the actual voice of Alf.
Gary. Wait, what was the dad's name?
Miss Ockmonic. That was okay. Well, I got no laughs. Jesus Christ!
Read the room.
I don't sound like that.
Wait, if you don't have, I don't trust people that don't have one sweet sentimental sitcom moment that like they can remember. Like, you know, Fresh Prince when Will, you know, when his dad pieces out.
Yeah.
If you didn't see that, or at least, you know, like, or shit, man, when Carl Winslow and Urkel have like this sweet moment about like,
sure,
you know, right. and
he's finally accepted into the family.
Yeah. And
when he finally kisses Laura.
Didn't Urkel have some like parent, like he didn't have he had parents, but he just, there was a reason they finally explained why he was over all the time, and it was like,
oh, he was molested. There's the molestation episode.
I forget that one.
I just love it, dude. I remember that's why I don't like Walking Dead anymore, because I don't care about the characters enough. I used to cry every episode. I'd be like, they're killing Tina, or they're killing the black dude, or
now it's like they're all dead and it's all and like now, a brand new character.
But I just got so, I love getting emotionally attached to characters and movies, and you know, it's
videos of animals becoming friends that shouldn't be friends.
Paul Palmieri posted this thing about a dog getting rescued the other day, and now that as a dog owner, like, then I love this dog more than life itself. It's just like,
so you have a dog
I'm
going to
cry right now, dude. I'm going to fucking,
really love
dude, I love, you know, I just love knowing where I've been to where I'm now. And the fact that I have a Doberman that my trainer came over yesterday and we ran through all this stuff and I watched her do it. So I stepped out of the box, because when I'm doing it, I'm like, no, this looks like the dog's doing it well. But when I watch my trainer do a 4 minutes like sit stay with the dog and walk 30 feet away from the dog, and the dog just sit there completely still, like, okay, tell me when I can move. And I was like, I did that.
Yeah.
I used to buy, you know, Oxycontin in downtown LA, you know, and now I got a fucking dog that could murder somebody, but never will, because I trained it so well. It's just a very religious experience. So yeah.
You think you get another dog?
When I get a bigger place.
Yeah.
This dog's going to be 90 pounds, bro. It's going to be fucking 90
All right,
pounds.
So Brad's not coming over to Josh's.
Fuck, dude. I'm going to get a goddamn saddle. You're going to ride the motherfucker on stage to the next comedy show.
With arms wide open.
2018, riding Lekka on stage.
Brad on a dog to this song is like how I, like, I want it to be, look, some people want to walk down the aisle to like, celebrate good times.
Dude, at your wedding, you're riding Lekka to, you're riding, you and,
we
get Stapp, or we get somebody dressed as Stapp, me, singing this in the crowd.
I call him right now, brother. That's my buddy,
if
dude.
If we can make it happen, would you?
I fuck yes. Are you kidding me, to have Scott Stapp sing at my wedding?
Oh my God!
I'm making that happen.
He lives in Nashville.
I mean, I'm already gonna cry. But if that happens,
let's make it happen,
I'm
buddy.
I'm gonna cry so hard. This was the best.
This was great. Thank you, guys.
I don't know why I put the phone down.
Yeah.
Wait. Can we just all sing one verse to make sure that we all know it?
This place, I show you everything with arms wide open.
Yeah, that guitar riff is beautiful.
It's a great song, dude. It's a great song. That's the only lyrics I know. I know this part. Don't try to get me to sing more. Wait, is this?
I got it.
Wait.
No!
If I'm ready.
That's not the word.
Yeah. To be the man.
Wait, hold on. You're singing so loud I can't verify.
I have to be.
Wow. Holy shit.
Cloak.
And see, this is how Scott Stapp sees if you will sing at your wedding. He goes, he calls you up and goes, I'm going to put it on karaoke and you sing it back to me.
And you go, okay, Scott Stapp.
I love how you made Scott Stapp sound like Johnny Depp. You're like, you, yeah, you come and put it on.
Scott Stapp, Johnny Depp, and Eddie Vedder, we all sound the same.
That's good, dude.
Yeah.
That is.
I just did Johnny Depp for Stern, and it just played today. I did a Johnny Depp, and they cut it together. It was basically, I did all these lines, and then they cut it together for Stern. You know how his Collins? And the guy just hit me up and said it just aired today. So.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
man.
I mean, I don't, you know, no one knows it's you, so it's, you know. Because they want you to think Stern's
Scott, you do.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey.
You do. I do.
Scott Stapp knows it's you.
Scott Stapp does, dude.
No, Johnny Depp, not Scott Stapp.
No, but...
Oh, Scott Stapp knows.
No, he still knows that Johnny Depp impression was you.
By the way, does Scott Stapp... Does Scott Stapp...
I'm the Stapp Man!
Good night, everybody!
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.